This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Shaoik. Most of us find it difficult to make lifestyle changes, especially when it comes to doing exercise or really any form of physical activity. But this is a really significant and important factor in improving our health, especially for those living with diabetes. So to help us find out how exercise and physical activity can help with diabetes management, we're speaking to sports and exercise physician Dr. Kavita Mahadevan. Good afternoon, Dr. Kavita. How are you today?
Good afternoon, yeah. I'm good, doing good. How are yourself?
I'm very well and I'm really interested to get into this topic because, I mean, obviously we talk about diabetes, its complications and ways to treat and manage it. We talk about it very regularly on our Health and Living segment, but it's very interesting to delve into, and we know, leaving medications aside, the lifestyle aspect of it is such a huge component, but it's also something that a lot of people struggle with. It's one thing to say eat better, eat healthier, exercise regularly, but how do you translate that into your daily routine and the challenges that people face when they hit that block or when they hit the plateau and, you know, try to have to re-motivate themselves again. So I hope we'll be able to get into all of that in this show. But perhaps just to set the stage first and to help us understand why we really need to get serious about addressing diabetes, what are the statistics and trends that we see in the prevalence of diabetes in Malaysia?
Okay, so based on the National Health and Morbidity Survey that was done in 2015, the prevalence of diabetes in Malaysia stands at 17%, which that equates to 3.5 million of the Malaysian population, of which 9% are undiagnosed cases and the remaining 8 are known cases. The trend is definitely increasing, with majority of the cases among the aging population, aged 70 to 74, more among females and in the Indian ethnicity. So it's definitely increasing. Our lifestyle is not helping. And so the surveys usually come out every 4 to 5 years. So there should be new results, new statistics anytime soon. I'm quite sure the readings will be definitely higher.
Higher, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah. And lifestyle is a big risk factor that contributes to the increase of diabetes. How much would you say physical inactivity plays a role in the risk of developing diabetes?
Okay. So, yes, we know that there are various types of diabetes, but the one that's most common is what we call as type 2 diabetes, where there's an issue with insulin resistance and insulin insensitivity and so on. And physical inactivity has been shown as an independent risk factor for the developing of diabetes. And you can see, you know, technology, modern years have made us more comfortable sitting down. We've got remote controls to do everything. Soon we probably will not even have to drive the car. Just press a button and get, you know, to our destination and so on. So yes, there are various epidemiological literatures. There are various observational studies and so on that has shown that physical inactivity is a very strong risk factor for diabetes. And I must say, especially when it comes to type 2 diabetes, it's a disease of the lifestyle. Yeah, you have genetic causes and all of it, but primarily it's a disease of the lifestyle.
Okay. What do you mean by independent risk factor?
So meaning to say that usually when you said, okay, you know, we say diabetes is you must have a positive family history, you must be having a sedentary lifestyle. So usually when we say independent means that risk factor stands alone. You could be negative for everything else. But the very simple fact that if you are physically inactive, that itself is a very big risk factor for you to develop what we call as a non-communicable disease, diabetes being one of them.
So meaning you may not have a family history of diabetes.
Yes.
But if you, and you may actually rank quite well in terms of the other risk factors.
Yes.
I presume obesity, though, is very much linked to physical inactivity.
Yeah. Yep. So based on that same survey, the one that was done in 2015, our Malaysians' obesity rate is at 17% and overweight is at 30%. So yes, those are very strong independent risk factors, again, for diabetes mellitus, yes.
Okay, so let's dive into physical activity, exercise, and any form of sports as well. How does exercise help someone with diabetes to manage their glucose levels? What is actually happening in the body when you exercise?
Okay, so maybe I'll just describe what's diabetes all about. Diabetes basically means high level of glucose in the blood. Okay, so what happens is when there's high level of glucose in the blood, normal physiological process is this glucose gets absorbed and sits in the muscle and in the liver. In diabetes, the absorption takes place, but there's still there's high levels of glucose still remaining in the blood.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically diabetes all about. So what exercise does is, so in other words, diabetes mellitus is a state where there's insulin resistance, which means that the pancreas is producing insulin, but the mechanism of action, the mode of action of insulin is reduced in diabetes mellitus. So this is where exercise plays a role, because for what exercise does is it improves insulin resistance, meaning to say it increases the absorption of blood glucose from the blood into the muscle cells to be stored. This is the role of exercise in assisting the absorption of glucose from the blood.
Mm-hmm. Does it matter how much exercise you do?
Yes. So I think what's very important is before someone starts exercising, we need to know, is it just a new onset diabetes? Is that diabetes associated with various complications which we know of? Because based on that, we give a prescription. So usually the more poorly controlled diabetes, we do not encourage them to go into high, what we call is high intensity or vigorous based exercises. But generally, in summary, if I were to advocate exercise in diabetes, it would be low to moderate intensity exercise.
Okay. Why do you not advocate for high intensity?
Okay. So what happens in diabetes is the glucose regulation in the system is very haywire, very messy. In exercise, yes, like I did mention earlier, exercise increases glucose absorption from the blood to the muscle.
Mm-hmm.
But exercise itself is a strenuous activity. During strenuous activity, or what we call a stressful activity, there are certain hormones that are produced, the stress hormones, adrenaline, noradrenaline. These hormones increases glucose level even higher.
Right.
So with a high-intensity exercise, glucose level goes extra high. With a distorted glucose metabolism, there's a risk of the patient going into very high levels of glucose post-exercise is very high.
Mm-hmm.
And they can go into further acute complications of diabetes.
Okay, all right. So in a short while, we'll get into, you know, how do you know what is low to moderate intensity, right? How do you gauge
sure.
that? But can we go a few steps back first to look at what type of exercises would be recommended for people with diabetes?
Okay, so when we speak about any form of exercise prescription, regardless whether you're diabetic or not, there are three components to it. Cardiorespiratory fitness, aerobic-based exercises, muscle strength and endurance, and flexibility. So in all individual who wants to improve their health status, they need to focus on all these three components, so regardless whether they're diabetic or not. We often hear, we said, okay, if you're diabetic, go for walks, go for jogs, go for cycling, a lot of aerobic-based exercises. That misnomer is wrong. It is important, yes, but it's only part of the component. So like I mentioned earlier, muscle is the site of where glucose is stored. So if one has got a poor body composition, which means low muscle mass, high body fat percentage, there would be less available areas for the muscle, for the glucose to be stored.
Mm-hmm.
So what, I mean, we know the objective of muscle strength exercises, strength training and so on, is to increase muscle mass. More muscle mass, more glucose can be stored. And that's why it's important to also incorporate resistance training into a diabetic patient.
Okay. Can you give some examples of what kind of exercises or activities would come under muscle or strength training?
Well, you know, we always think, you know, you got to hit the gym and carry dumbbells and barbells and so on to
that's
get
right. No, and that can put a lot of people off the
yes,
idea of exercise.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, and I must say sometimes the fitness professionals may not be very comfortable because of the fear and so on. But like I said, it's not about carrying external weights. Sometimes our body weight is more than enough. So when I say body weight, you do not need to go to a gym. It's things that you can do within your bedroom itself to improve your glycemic status.
Mm-hmm. For example?
squats, push-ups, running on the spot. There's so many things that you can think of, actually.
Mm-hmm.
You can, you know, to make things easier, breaking it down to lower body exercises like squats, lunges, deadlifts, upper body. You can talk about push-ups. We can talk about using external weights such as the resistance bands, which are so cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can speak about core-based exercises. So I think if you just Google up on body weight exercise, you'll get one whole list.
Okay,
that you can do.
Does other physical activities, lighter kind of physical activity, like doing housework, okay, does all that count?
Well, okay. So if we are dealing with a population who is becoming more and more sedentary, where movement, people have forgotten how to move. So definitely physical activity. So exercise is basically a subset of physical activity. Being more active at home, yes, helps, but it's it would help in a very minimal exercise. There's an objective to it. There's an objective to improve the cardiovascular fitness, muscle strength, and also flexibility. Whereas physical activity like housework may increase, and I mean, will increase energy and expenditure, but may not necessarily improve on the glycemic control.
I see. Okay, but it's just a way to get you moving.
Yes,
right?
Because like I said, in diabetes, most of them tend to be obese and sedentary. So definitely, when there is increased movement, there is more calorie being burned, there's better weight management, and definitely better glycemic control.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll go for a quick break, but when we come back, I'd like to look at, you know, how would a person sort of plan their exercise routine then? What does low to moderate intensity mean? How do I divide aerobic, strength training, and flexibility exercises? And of course, how often and how much exercise should I be putting in a week? So we'll go into that. Obviously, a lot of it has to be individualized, but perhaps trying to understand a broad range that we can then work under.
Sure.
I'm talking to Dr. Kavita Mahadevan, sports and exercise physician, about managing diabetes through exercise. You are listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Stay tuned. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living. I'm T. Xiaoyik. In the studio with me, Dr. Kavita Mahadevan, sports and exercise physician. We are discussing how to manage diabetes through exercise. And before the break, Dr. Kavita, you talked about how important it is to include all three categories of physical activity into your exercise routine, as for anyone actually, but especially when you have diabetes. So obviously everyone thinks of the aerobic or cardiorespiratory exercises, which is what gets your heart pumping,
yes,
I presume.
Yeah.
But we must not forget strength training exercises or resistance exercises, as well as flexibility. And you also mentioned for people with diabetes, it is recommended to keep to low to moderate intensity. Overly high intense exercises will increase your blood glucose levels, and also there will be issues with the hormones that are produced, right?
Yes.
So can we talk a little bit about, you know, how do I understand what is low to moderate intensity for me? How is there a way to calculate that?
Okay. So there's got an easier way, what we call as maximum heart rate. We call something that's known as a Carvenan's formula. But in a very simple way of measuring it is 220 minus H. So let's assume I'm 20 years old. I'd like to feel so. So that would be 200. So to get what we call as a moderate intensity, it's usually along the range of 64 to 76% of that maximum heart rate. So when we calculated earlier, it was 200.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about 64 to 76% of that maximum heart rate.
So that's what you should achieve when you're doing your exercise.
Yeah, so that's moderate intensity. So low intensity is below 64%.
Mm, okay.
There's another way of assessing it, which is a more objective assessment, but there are very few centres in Malaysia who have it. It's something similar to a stress test, where we're all, you know, strapped up to gadgets and oxygen consuming. So it's known as the VO2 max assessment, is maximum oxygen consumption is thing. But what this is not very practical, because not very many centres in Malaysia has it. So it's not the most ideal way of prescription.
Mm.
What would be ideal is something we call as rating of perceived exertion, which is something I call a scale of 6 to 20. So something similar, maybe you've come across something called as the pain scale. So something similar, 6 to 20. So when I say a moderate intensity scale, it's between the range of 10 to 13, mm-hmm. 11 to 13, and anything, and what's low is probably below 10, below 11. So basically what happens is when this person is exercising, at any point if I decide to stop him or her, I'll say, okay, in the scale of 6 to 20, how do you feel? If she says, oh, you know what, I don't think I can do some more, it's too much, I feel like a 17, then I know it's a high intensity.
So this is a very subjective.
It's very subjective,
yeah.
But it's something more practical and there's no money involved.
Right. But this is something that an individual would have to do with a personal trainer?
Yes. I mean, there are various, certified personal trainers out there who are well-versed with diabetes. So yes, it's good that if you could sort out one, because they would know how to guide you for better health, definitely. Mm. Yeah.
But for practical reasons, mm-hmm. There are some people who can't afford a personal trainer,
yes.
perhaps.
Yes.
Like you said, the VO2 max assessment is not easily accessible.
Yes.
What is the best and most accessible method for somebody to, sort of know what intensity they should be at?
Well, so you do have those heart rate monitors. Those days, it was the polar heart rate monitors, and then now you've got the watch.
So your personal devices.
Yeah. But again, like I said, our true population of Malaysians out there are not well-to-do. So
yes.
getting access to these may not be possible. So again, I will fall back to rating of perceived exertion. Yes, these watches are good. These monitors are good. They give you numbers. They are very encouraging. They allow you to progress. But let's, again, face it. In reality, not everyone can afford it.
Okay. So I can do it myself, this rating?
Definitely. Mm. Definitely. So it's just asking yourself at any point, okay, I'm going for a walk. I'm going to dedicate half an hour a day and go for a walk. At maybe every 5 or 10 minutes, how do I feel? If I feel it's not much of an effort, maybe I should walk a bit faster. Or maybe I should try going up a slope. And then again, ask yourself, maybe after 5 minutes, how do I feel? So once you remember that feeling at the range of 10 to 13, remember that feeling in the next session, try to walk at that speed or at that intensity.
Mm. And presumably you should be looking at slowly trying to increase, push that threshold as well.
Correct. So what guidelines are there to say that you need to achieve 150 minutes in a week?
Mm.
But if you were to break it down, 150 minutes in a week, and it's over 5 times a week, some people can't afford to even walk 30 minutes consecutively. Not to worry. You can even break it down to 3 bouts of 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got 10 minutes in the morning, 10 minutes in the afternoon and night, and slowly you build up. So those who actually did that 10-10-10 had the same amount of benefit as those who did the 30 minutes continuous.
Mm.
So this is good because you have a sedentary, obese individual who can't walk, leg pain, knee pain and so on. So you get them moving at a shorter duration and slowly build them up.
Okay. And how much of this 150 minutes a week, how do we break that down into aerobic resistance and flexibility?
Okay, that's going to be difficult. So basically, the guidelines from American College of Sports Medicine, that's primarily for the cardiorespiratory fitness, aerobic-based exercise.
Mm.
So basically, if you look into 30 minutes, 5 times a week is most days of the week, whereas for resistance training is 2 to 3 times in a week. And flexibility is 6 days or more, which basically means every day.
Every day. Okay.
Yeah.
Can you give us an idea of what are the kinds of flexibility exercises that we can do?
Well, there's nothing specific to say that will improve in diabetes control, but any form of total body stretches, for me, I always tell my patients the easiest way, if they could run through the sun salutation in yoga, that gives them a total body stretching exercises.
Mm.
So I always tell them that's the easiest that you can do at home, mm-hmm. and practice as many rounds as possible. But no, specific to diabetes, there's nothing to be precise.
Okay, all right. Then specifically for people with diabetes, though, we do know that it's important to be checking your blood glucose levels
yes.
throughout the day. So how do we look at blood glucose levels when it comes to doing exercise? When should they be checking it? What are the red flags that they should be looking out for?
Okay, so definitely before an exercise, if one has a sugar monitor, blood glucose sugar monitor at home, they should check it before the exercise, regardless of how well controlled they are. So of course, not many can afford it, but those who can, please make an effort to check. So now you've got two circumstances. It's either your sugar is low or sugar level is high. So what do we mean by low and high? So anything less than 4.3 pre-exercise, usually we'll suggest them to take about a 15 gram of carbohydrate snack. So a 15 gram would probably be about a slice of a wholemeal bread prior to exercise, and maybe after about 10 to 15 minutes to recheck the blood glucose level, and definitely the levels go up, and then you're safe to exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have another group which is probably already high to start off with. When it's high, when we say anything more than 10, we would normally advise not to exercise for that day, and maybe to continuously observing, checking for the subsequent days. If the level is still high, you're best to go back to your doctor and get it rechecked.
Okay, all right. And what about after the exercise? Let's say you've done your 10 minutes of some brisk walking. What do I need to look out for when I'm checking my blood glucose?
Okay, so generally, to be honest, if you are doing a low to moderate intensity exercise, you should be safe. Nothing to really worry about.
Mm-hmm.
But if sometimes, you've got that willpower to do a bit more, So in high-intensity exercises, like I said, the hormones that get produced increases blood glucose level. So there's a risk of, after exercising, the blood glucose level can skyrocket high. So it's important half an hour after, 1 hour, and up to 12 hours after exercise. So sometimes what can happen is, so this is the thing with diabetes. When there's high blood glucose, it triggers insulin response, insulin to be released.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a state where after exercise, blood glucose levels skyrockets. And because of the skyrocket, insulin gets released, and then that triggers a hypoglycemic state.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you have individuals who, while they are sleeping, they go into hypoglycemic attacks.
While they're asleep.
Mm. So it's very important that the assessment, like you mentioned earlier, half an hour after, 1 hour, and up to 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But these usually happen among those who perform high-intensity exercises and those who are poorly controlled, diabetes who are poorly controlled.
Okay. So how would I know? I mean, if it is a sort of progressive state and it could be perhaps 12 hours later or somewhere in between that time that I may go into hypoglycemia, what are the signs that I could potentially look out for?
Okay. So, if I were to summarize the presentation of hypoglycemia, imagine you're in a stressful state. You start cold, clammy hands, palpitation, breaking into sweat, and, dizziness, giddiness, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But, if it happens while you're sleeping, it might be a bit difficult, but usually that will awaken you. And if you start having that feeling, so it's very important to have a carbohydrate-rich snack next to you, when you're asleep.
Okay, all right. Also, diabetes is linked to complications like nerve complications. I think particularly what we know that people with diabetes have to be very careful about is injuries to their feet.
Yes.
So do you want to talk a little bit about that in the context of exercise?
Okay. So diabetes complications itself, we usually divide them into two, what we call as microvascular, it affecting small vessels, and you've got the macro affecting the big vessels. So let's focus onto the micro complications first. Three parts gets affected, the eyes, the nerves, neuropathy, and then the kidneys. So since you mentioned about the nerves, okay. So basic foot care comes in handy. Every day, check your feet. So for this group of individuals who've got neuropathy, where they don't feel a prick, they don't feel a thing. It's very important for us to not prescribe exercises. There's some things called as barefoot training, exercising without your shoes. So it will be important for us not to implement that or prescribe that to them. Even if it's going to be home-based exercise, maybe like simple trainer shoes will be good enough to help them. We want to avoid exercises that involves a lot of outdoor. For example, jungle trekking, hiking, because you don't know what will scratch you, what will bite you, and so on. And in some cases, when the neuropathy gets a bit bad, we've called something known as a Charcot feet, where the foot is in a very... it becomes very physically abnormal.
Is it gangrenous?
Not gangrenous. It's the entire structure of the feet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The structure of the feet. But usually, again, that becomes in severe cases of poorly controlled diabetes. So in those cases, we may not want to prescribe weight-bearing exercises.
Mm.
Walking, jogging may not be handy. So that's where non-weight-bearing such as cycling, swimming, and so on will help.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And physical activity and exercise in the case of gestational diabetes.
Okay.
Women who develop diabetes during pregnancy, what is your advice for them in terms of exercise?
They must exercise. Okay. So the thing with pregnancy, because it always comes in with the stress factor, the baby's health. But not controlling your diabetes during pregnancy can lead to a lot of complications for the child. Big babies, heart defects, and sudden death. So again, the concept or the entire theory of exercise among the diabetics who is non-pregnant and among the thing does not differ. So again, they fall back to the same guidelines. Cardiorespiratory, 150 minutes a week. Muscle strength and endurance and flexibility.
Mm.
In terms of prescription, it differs because she's pregnant. So there are some do's and don'ts in exercise in pregnancy, but not because of the diabetes.
Mm, okay. What are the don'ts then, just to be sure that it is safe for a pregnant mother?
Okay. So again, the most important thing is getting clearance from the attending obstetrician gynecology. Second, blood sugar monitoring before the exercise. Then again comes in. Some mothers will be started on oral hypoglycemic agent tablets. Some of them might be on insulin. So for example, if the mother is on insulin, so we're going to call it the non-exercise site. So for example, if I'm going, usually we inject in the tummy, okay? So if the, or you can even choose the thigh muscle or in the arm. So if I'm going to inject my insulin on the legs for on today, for example, the thigh, I would not want to exercise my lower body for that day.
Mm.
Okay, because when you inject insulin into a particular muscle, for example, the thigh, the rate of absorption, if you perform, I mean, in the, with the context that you're performing a lower body exercise, the rate of insulin absorption increases, which means the incidence of hypoglycemia might also increase. So if you're going to inject on your thighs for that particular day, why don't you just focus on upper body exercises? And then the next day, you could switch. Put it over the abdomen, and you could do probably do lower body exercises.
Mm, okay.
Yeah.
All right. We'll go for a quick break now. In the studio with me, Dr. Kavita Mahadevan, sports and exercise physician. We're discussing how to manage diabetes through exercise. And I think we've really gone into quite a bit of detail and quite a lot of practical information that can help you to sort of tailor a physical activity routine that suits your lifestyle as well as your particular condition. What comes hand in hand with exercise when it comes to managing diabetes is diet. So we'll go a little bit into that when we come back from the break. And also, if I need more beyond trying to manage it on my own, where can I go to have somebody to guide me through this, right? And I think a lot of us just basically try to struggle through exercise without knowing what we're doing.
Yeah.
We sort of get stuck and then we give up.
Yes.
So, how do we make sure that we're on the right track and continue to stay motivated? That's what I want to find out when we come back from the next break, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. In the studio with me is Dr. Kavita Mahadevan, sports and exercise physician. We're talking about managing diabetes through exercise. Diabetes is one of the few non-communicable diseases that Malaysians, unfortunately, are notoriously known for having high levels. It's a problem that concerns the whole country, really, but also at the individual level. Then what can you do to prevent your diabetes from getting worse,
mm-hmm.
To keep it under control? Because that's what diabetes treatment is all about. It's about managing it in your life and keeping your blood glucose levels as tightly controlled as possible. And exercise plays a huge role in that. We've talked about aerobic strength training and flexibility exercises. We've talked about how to manage your blood glucose levels and ensure that you don't get into hypo and hyper glycemic emergencies. But let's look a little bit, Dr. Kavita, at the diet.
Sure.
Because is there any point in doing exercise if you are not managing your diet?
Well, you can't run away from a bad diet. So no matter how much you're exercising, if your food intake is poor, yes, you would get some benefits from the exercise, but in total glycemic control, you're not going to achieve it. Mm. So if I were to be, yes, I know I'm a sports physician, I should be advocating exercise, but when it comes to general well-being, regardless diabetic or non-diabetic, it's still food number one first.
Okay. So what are the principles that you would advise people to keep in mind when it comes to making changes to their diet?
Okay. So normally you've heard this thing of glycemic index. So it's basically a ranking scale of how much a particular glucose-rich food, carbohydrate-rich food, increases the blood glucose level after consumption. If you Google up, there's a table that shows low GI, moderate GI, and high GI, and so on. What it basically means is food that has got a lower glycemic index does not increase the blood glucose exponentially once eaten, whereas those with a high GI causes a rapid increase in the blood glucose level. But this does not mean if I eat everything in my low GI group, my glucose control is going to be high. I mean, it's going to be good. Because again, food equates to calories. So sometimes you have this, oh, that's good for diabetes. But if you overconsume it, it's still going to be a disaster. That is one way of seeing it, what we call as glycemic index food. But again, what's more important is that we need to know where are a lot of refined sugar hidden. Sugar, in other words. Yes, carbohydrate is broken down to glucose. Glucose is sugar. So you've got the natural source of glucose. And you've got the, you know, over the years, you've got refined sugars coming in and so on. And so it's very important for one to educate themselves on. No, you have people say, oh, I have all home-cooked food. But sometimes that be good. There'll be a lot of hidden sugar we one would not identify to have, you know, upset the entire glycemic control.
Okay. So what are some examples of hidden refined sugars in our daily Malaysian diet?
Okay, let's see. Simple thing as a tomato ketchup. 1 tablespoon of tomato ketchup has got 4 teaspoons of sugar, which equates to about 4 times 4, that's 16 grams of sugar. So in a day, based on American Heart Association, a male can have up to 36 grams or 9 teaspoons of sugar in a day, whereas a female and children and below, 6 teaspoons or 6 times 4, 24 grams of sugar in a day. So if that 1 tablespoon of tomato ketchup has already given you 16 grams, we don't have much left for the day. And many of us don't stop at 1 tablespoon of ketchup. You know. So generally, most products that have got an expiry date that comes in a package would bound to have high levels of salt and sugar, because we know salt and sugar are good preservatives. So the moment there's an expiry date to it, I won't say it most definite, but most of them tend to be high in sugar.
So what? How do we know what to look out for? How do we identify food sources that have these hidden sugars?
Okay, so we know sugar is a very common term. But if you actually Google, there are up to about 75 different names for sugar. Okay. So just say a carbonated drink. Okay. When you look at the first thing you want to assess is the total carbohydrate. So just say it's 20 grams. The next line underneath would be total sugar. We said the total carbohydrate was 20 grams. If you find that the total sugar is more than 50%, that means in this case 10 grams or more, there's high possibility that it is a sugar loaded drink. Sometimes in some labels, they do not put in the total sugar. So what do? We look into the ingredient list and we find for the word sugar. If you find sugar in the first three, you know it's a sugar-loaded product. So first thing again is look into total carbohydrate. Then look into the total sugar. If it's more than 50%, stay away from it. If you can't find it, look into the ingredient list. And if it's within the first three, try not to purchase that.
Okay. All right. You know, being diagnosed with diabetes is not an easy fact for a lot of people to accept, especially when it comes with all you have to make a 180-degree turn to your lifestyle. You have to be on medications for life. Perhaps some people even have to be on insulin. All of that comes with a lot of psychological and emotional acceptance as well, I think. How do you talk to your patients or your clients about that process? Because I presume you can't just say you have diabetes, or they come to you with a diagnosis of diabetes. You can't just say, okay, you know, this is the kind of exercise you have to do, and off you go. Right? There has to be a process in helping them to, you know, have ownership of
their health.
Of their health, and so that they will be motivated. How do you talk to a client when they first come to you, let's say when they've just been diagnosed with diabetes?
So when we speak about the readiness of them, okay, so if they've already found a personal trainer, or if they've already come to a doctor and said, you know, doctor, I'm diabetic, I need to start exercising, they're usually at a very stable state, what we call as they're no more in the pre-contemplation, they're not in the contemplation state, they're already at the state of action, okay? So those group is usually or are already motivated.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easier to prescribe for those group of population as compared to someone who thinks that, okay, I'm diabetic, I take my medication, everything should be fine. So in this group of my patients where they are diabetic, I usually give them a monthly appointment. So what I start off with them is telling them, okay, I will not prescribe you any exercises first because most of them are physically inactive. Simple thing I'll tell you to get them to do is try to be more physically active. Simple thing that you hear right now, you know, getting 10,000 steps per day. 10,000 steps is quite of an effort. 6,000 is good enough. So you're just telling them simple changes, walking up the stairs, taking a longer route to the car or something like that. Small changes is what that matters. So only when I see there's an improvement in their daily activities, because I get them to write an exercise journal together with a food journal. Only once I see that, you know, yes, there's some insight, there's some improvement, only then I put in the component of exercise in.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I were to start exercise too soon and it becomes too much of an effort for them, there's high possibility they'll just drop off.
Mm-hmm.
So simple changes within the house, within their working environment is good enough. And then slowly progress them from there.
Okay. I said earlier that there are many people who would attempt to try and, you know, quote unquote, get healthy.
Yes.
On their own.
Yes.
And perhaps it's because they don't have access to somebody like you, you know, a sports, an exercise physician or a personal trainer. How important is it to actually have some sort of a professional alongside your, you know, healthy lifestyle journey as opposed to attempting it on your own?
I would expect that all diabetic patients in Malaysia are seen by a physician. I mean, seen by a medical professional, i.e. a doctor, better still, a specialist or so on. So that would be actually quite tricky because you have the doctors actually monitoring onto the glucose level. We'll probably tell them, okay, glucose, good control, bad control, so on. Let's increase the dosages of the medication and so on. But when it comes to exercise, it might be something lacking because we're not too sure how comfortable is the doctor in prescribing exercises. I think sometimes there are guidelines that you can follow by the American College of Sports Medicine. It's free, it's easily available. There they do give you guidelines on what to do, how much to do, and the intensity and so on. So maybe those are important guidelines for you to read. The National Diabetes Association has got some guidelines over there. There's national CPGs. Not much, but that would be a good start to start off with.
Mm, yeah. Okay. And in your experience, you know, once you've got them physically active, mm-hmm. perhaps even onto a regular exercise routine, is there a point at which, you know, maybe they plateau or they hit some sort of block or they lose motivation? What are the factors that would, you know, contribute to that obstacle and how do we overcome that?
Okay, so like many of us, when we embark on a fitness journey, we expect to see changes. Changes usually happen after 6 weeks of consistent training. So if one were to, when I say consistent training, is about 4 times or more in a week. Not many people can do that. So when they don't do that and they don't see the results, again, they're going to be demotivated and they think that, you know what, exercise is not going to help me. So again, it's here, it's all about education, educating, telling them it's slow progress and then there's going to be progressive overload, which means start slow. Once you've built up, it could be simple changes, as not maybe not the change in your weighing scale, but how your clothes fit or how, you know, when you used to take that one flight of stairs, how from a struggle now to not much of a struggle. It's looking into small goals and then targeting big. Because yes, the dropout rate for exercise is always very high because it's, unfortunately, in most cases, exercise is prescribed or exercise is done by many for cosmetic reasons, you know, rather than, oh, because I've got diabetes, I better exercise. It's more of, I'm overweight, I'm obese, I better exercise to drop my weight and maybe that will help me for my diabetes.
Mm, okay.
Yeah.
Well, we've run out of time. And, you know, I think we have actually really been able to look into specifics when it comes to exercise. So rather than just a sweeping recommendation, exercise 150 minutes a week is really about understanding how you can break that down, different categories, make sure you get your cardio, strength training, do enough flexibility, stretching and all that as well. Do you have a final message then on this topic of managing diabetes through exercise?
Well, I think it's very important, not just in diabetic, but everyone should start moving. And when I say moving, I don't mean exercise. Everyone should start just getting up from the chair. You know, I think it's very important that we might think that, oh, no, I go to the gym. But that 2 hours in the gym plus 8 hours of sitting down is still an unhealthy lifestyle. So it's making an effort every 1 hour or two from just getting up from your chair and go for a short walk. That is good enough to change your lifestyle. So it's diabetic or not diabetic, just start moving.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. That was Dr. Kavita Mahadevan, sports and exercise physician, talking to us about how to keep your diabetes under control through exercise and just keep moving.
Yes, keep moving.
You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.